This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Iraq's parliament accepted Prime Minister Adel Abdul Mahdi's resignation on Sunday amid heightened protests there. Mahdi resigned Friday, and the president, Barham Saleh, will now ask the largest bloc in parliament to nominate a new prime minister. Mahdi and his government have agreed to stay on in a caretaker role until a new prime minister is approved. Mahdi's resignation is unlikely to satisfy anti-government protesters who have said it is not enough for a new prime minister to take over. They're demanding changes to the entire political system, which they say is corrupt, inept, and does little to help impoverished Iraqis despite the nation's oil wealth. The White House says that it will not participate in Wednesday's impeachment hearing by the House Judiciary Committee. We'll get more from VOA's Sarash Arabasadi.
The Trump administration has so far stonewalled the process led by congressional Democrats who this week invited the White House to participate.
They have not been willing to obey lawful subpoenas that have been issued. We are certainly hoping that the president, his counsel, will take advantage of that opportunity. If he has not done anything wrong, we're certainly anxious to hear his explanation of that.
Republicans welcomed the opportunity, but cried foul at thus far not having been able to call all of their own witnesses. This all stems from a July 25th phone call in which Trump appears to withhold congressionally approved military aid on the condition of President Zelensky investigating Trump's perceived political rival. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Palestinians say that they are not at all happy with the announcement by Israel Sunday of a plan for a new Jewish settlement in the West Bank city of Hebron, a longtime flashpoint for violence between Jews and Muslims. About 1,000 Jews live surrounded by 200,000 Palestinians in the city, which both groups regard as a holy site. This is VOA News. Representatives of nearly 200 countries began annual climate talks in Madrid Monday, shadowed by alarming evidence of a deepening climate crisis and the looming exit of the United States from a global pact to fight it. VOA's Lattice Ahok has details.
Teenage Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg will be a day or two late for the conference in Madrid because the unexpected change of venue left her on the wrong side of the Atlantic. She sailed across the ocean to the North American coast to raise awareness of the damage to the environment caused by the air traffic. And now she's sailing back. Thunberg is calling for action instead of words on the climate change. A growing number of young people around the world participate in street protests demanding transition to clean energy and policies that would cut emissions that harm the planet.
We young people have been exposed to the climate change problem since we were born.
Speaking on the eve of the 25th UN Climate Conference, the UN Secretary General commended young people for their engagement.
That's VOA's Lattice Ahok reporting. A U.S. State Department official accuses China of attempting to erase the Muslim identity of Uyghurs by seeking to demolish or close places of worship in Xinjiang province in northwest China. VOA's Marissa Melton.
A U.S. State Department official has accused China of attempting to erase the Muslim identity of Uyghurs by seeking to demolish or close places of worship in Xinjiang in northwest China. The official who spoke to VOA on the condition of anonymity said the Chinese Communist Party, in its campaign against the Uyghur minority, has removed religious symbols from places of worship. Since early 2017, the Chinese government has been accused of a crackdown in the region through detention and forceful re-education of Muslim Uyghurs. Chinese officials call the alleged detention program vocational training. The United States says at least 1 million Uyghurs are being held in the camps where they're exposed to torture and forced labor. An estimated 13 million ethnic Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities are believed to live in the Xinjiang region. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Unknown gunmen opened fire in a church in eastern Burkina Faso Sunday, killing at least 14 people. Officials say the attack took place in one town near the border with Niger. Soldiers are hunting for the attackers who fled on motor scooters after gunning down worshippers during a Sunday mass. Christians and others have lived peacefully in the Muslim-majority country until a series of attacks blamed on jihadists spilled over from neighboring Mali last year, leaving hundreds dead. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, December 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon separatists claim responsibility for shooting at a Cameroon airline passenger plane.
If we intended to bring it down, we could have brought it down, but we knew there were passengers on board. That is why we were very careful not to bring it down, but to send a message to French Cameroon.
Chris Anu is a spokesperson for the self-proclaimed Ambazonia Republic. Liberia's Minister of State for Presidential Affairs will respond to criticism the country's economy is dying a slow death. And Zimbabwe's opposition MDC says police on Sunday fired live bullets at MDC leader Nelson Chamisa.
As we got to the clinic, which was our second stop, we fairly started when the police started firing live ammunition and rubber bullets and tear gas at the crowd and at the president.
Nkululeko Sibanda is the MDC presidential spokesperson. And Tanzania's policy banning pregnant girls from school comes under fire. Those stories plus Samson Omale's post are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Cameroon separatists have claimed responsibility for shooting at a Cameroon airline passenger plane on Sunday as they approached Bamenda Airport. However, Chris Anu, the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed interim government of Ambazonia, says the shooting was not intended to bring the plane down, but rather to send a message to the Cameroon government that all Cameroon government planes are banned from flying over Ambazonia airspace. Cameroon Airlines said the flight from Douala landed safely in Bamenda. Anu also accused the Cameroon government of using commercial planes to transport soldiers and weapons.
The resolution forces did not shoot down. They shot at it, not to bring it down, but to send a sign to the French Cameroon government that the people of Ambazonia, and of course the interim government of Ambazonia, has banned any French Cameroon plane from flying over the airspace of Ambazonia. So it was not intent to bring the plane down. It was intent to send a signal.
But Chris, this is a passenger plane.
Again, and that is the reason why we did not shoot it with the intent of bringing it down. If we intended to bring it down, we could have brought it down, but we knew there were passengers on board. That is why we were very careful not to bring it down, but to send a message to French Cameroon. We have warned them. The only flights we will accept over Ambazonian airspace are United Nations flights and any other flights that we would give permission to fly over our airspace.
One of the separatist leaders, a man called Cho Ayaba, who says he is president of the Ambazonia Council, is quoted as saying that commercial planes are often used to transport Cameroon soldiers and weapons. Do you share this thought?
He is very, very correct, and that is one of the reasons we have earlier passed the message to French Cameroon, informing them that having declared our independence in October 2017, we will not allow any of their planes, whether a passenger plane or military plane, hovering or landing over our territory. We have sent these signals today to let them know in the past we have brought down some of their military helicopters. Today, it was a passenger plane which we did not intend to bring it down just because we knew it was loaded with innocent people. But we sent that signal to let La République du Cameroun understand we will bring down. They should forget about the capabilities. We have the capabilities, and we will bring down any French Cameroon plane, military or civilian, that they attempt to bring back over our airspace or our territory.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed interim government of Ambazonia. He was speaking with us from the U.S. city of Houston. Zimbabwe's opposition Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, says its leader, Nelson Chamisa, was nearly gunned down by the police on Sunday in the country's Marondera region east of Harare, while Chamisa and party supporters were planting trees near a clinic. Police spokesperson, Assistant Commissioner Paul Nyanti, dismissed the allegations as false, saying the police used tear gas to disperse the MDC activists who he said were holding an illegal gathering. But MDC presidential spokesman Nkululeko Sibanda says Chamisa left the scene unhurt, while some party supporters suffered injuries when the police opened fire with live ammunition and rubber bullets.
As we got to the clinic, which was our second stop, we barely started when the police started firing live ammunition and rubber bullets and tear gas at the crowd and at the president.
What makes you sure that, these were the police and not the army or any other person?
To us, it really, it's neither here nor there, whether it's the police nor the army. We know that they're getting the final authority from ZANU-PF and from Mr. Mnangagwa himself. And that is the crisis. It doesn't matter who's got the gun. The question is that somebody has given the instruction to shoot. And these people who were in police uniform shot at us. And after they started retreating, we followed them, and we are positive that they went into a police camp. But we do know that there is a very thin line between the police and the military these days. It looks as though they just move between those departments as Nairo wants them to.
Did you make any police report?
We have no point or reason to make any police report against the police. In this country, that is not fathomable.
Was your meeting or your work that you are talking about actually sanctioned by the police?
We do not need police permission to go to work. We were at work planting trees, preserving our environment. There is no law that says we should inform the police or seek any permission from them. The law is very clear that it's about meetings. If you don't have a meeting, you've got to tell them. And that's the truth of it. And so we've broken the law, and the police themselves, we spoke to them. They acknowledged that we didn't break any law.
After the shooting, did you continue planting trees, or you stopped, or what are you doing right now?
Well, of course, the area we were at that moment became contaminated. The environment was no longer friendly for us to plant trees. There was tear gas everywhere. People were terrified, the people who work there. And for that reason, President Chamisa shifted his activities from the clinic at that time in the public interest and moved on to the MDC office, where he completed his activities.
Nkululeko Sibanda is the spokesperson for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. He was speaking with Gibbs Dube of View Zimbabwe Service. The police action surprised some ZANU-PF activists like Joseph Schumann, a former ZANU-PF lawmaker who says police should have found a better way of dispersing the MDC activists instead of using bullets.
I'll be very disappointed if that is true. Planting of trees is one of the most essential things that every Zimbabwean must actually partake of. I would love a day when I hear that all of us, be it 40 million of us, went out of our way each to plant a tree. That would really save our environment, our climate. We are already experiencing a lot of climate changes. Look at the drought that we're having and the catastrophes that are befalling us, like a second Ida and stuff like that. All these are due to climate change issues, and planting of trees would go a long way in alleviating some of these problems that we face in terms of the weather and stuff like that. So really, if Chamisa and his gang for once decided to do a positive thing like plant trees, why would the police go out of their way to go and brutalize them there? That would be very insane and inhuman, and definitely the person who has done that must definitely be looked at and investigated, and head must start to roll.
Mr. Chuma, why are the police doing all this?
I can tell you right now that I am a member of ZANU-PF, and I sit in some meetings that they do give a direction to how ZANU-PF is going to go as a way forward. And we are a progressive party. Under this new dispensation, we have said that we want to do everything right. We want to try by all means to resuscitate this economy. And definitely, such brutality does not then resound well with the kind of vision that our president has. So what I'm simply trying to say is that if such a thing occurred, then it simply means and shows that there are some people, hidden elements, that are against the dictates of our party, ZANU-PF. ZANU-PF did not go out there and fire guns and brutalize people. It is the police, and they must account for their action. Because honestly speaking, what is wrong with somebody planting a tree? And why would you want to shoot at somebody who is actually adding to the wellness of our environment? So if ever there is anything like that, let it be investigated.
Joseph Chuma is a former ZANU-PF lawmaker. He spoke with reporter Gabe Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Today is Monday, the second day of December, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Let's say shout out to all our VOA affiliate stations around Africa. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. Liberia's Minister of State for Presidential Affairs admits the country's current economic condition is dire, but he says President George Weah's government is taking steps to improve the situation. Nathaniel McGee says solving the problem is not the responsibility of President Weah alone. He says all Liberians must come together to solve the problem. Last month, Mr. Augustin Weah, a man claiming to be the cousin of President George Weah, accused Mr. McGee on this program that the minister had asked for a $500,000 kickback from a Burkina Faso-based company wanting to do business in Liberia. McGee denies the accusation, saying President Weah would have fired him if the president thought there was a scintilla of truth in the allegations.
Let's use a man argument. We got to listen to that interview very clearly. Mr. Weah, to be honest with you, I've seen Mr. Weah maybe three times. Like you say, he claimed to be the cousin of the president, which the president says is not true, that information is incorrect. And he said he took my complaint to the president, and the president never intervened. Let me tell you one thing. The president never encourages any individual, not even a family member, to engage in idle corruption. If the president were to establish that I was involved, the president would have fired me. Mr. Weah is a common criminal who tried to bribe officials of government. And the president be very upset by the attitude of someone who's alleging to be a relative of his, we engage in trying to bribe official government to just get a simple contract. What sense does it make for an investor who wants to bring a private capital to invest in a country by building local housing for Liberians to benefit, and you are asking that person for money? It makes no sense.
Minister, this being the holiday season, I want to focus on the economic situation in Liberia. I just want to give you a sample of some of the things that people tell me or that I read on social media. This person says Liberia is shrinking and dying slowly. No money in the country. This one said things are getting extremely hard, bad. The state of economy has injured just every sector of our country. What's the government assessment of the economy?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is things are tough, but the government is taking steps to try to improve it. Every country has a problem, and this is not yet very unique to Liberia. Even America, Obama took office, America in a deep recession, you know that. But the country came together to solve the problem. Liberia need to come together to solve the problem. This is not a responsibility of the president alone, because this recession started before Mrs. Sally left power. She said that Liberia was going to have a very tough time. And the president acknowledged that in his inaugural speech when he said, I'm taking away a broken economy. This is what is happening.
Does the government owe the civil servants back pay now?
But this is not very unique to the country. Even during Mrs. Sally's time, people still use the owe. But the government making effort, yes. I think efforts have been made. The Minister of Finance has informed the president that we'll be in arrear of 1 month during this July, December season, but there'll be payment for October. Some employees have already received their October and November pay. And the IMF has acknowledged that given the situation, the government will be in arrear for 1 month. But as we get to February, there'll be no arrear, because by that time, the international partner who are giving some budget support would have brought their budget support in, and I think the country will begin to move very quickly.
I read two notices from two government ministries informing their employees of the government's decision to cut salaries. Is that the case? You cutting salaries?
Yeah, but obviously, part of the IMF recommendation, in a tight economic situation, when you have people making exorbitant money. Look, in Sierra Leone, for instance, cabinet ministers are making around $2,000. Liberia, when the president took over, cabinet ministers were making, some of them were making $10,000, $15,000. Now I'm making around, I think, around 5,000. And even at that, there will still be...
You make around 5,000.
As a cabinet minister.
Per month.
Of course. What I'm saying to you, the president has to take a strong action. The country is in a mess. We can't just be making money all around the place. We have to reduce our salary to make sure we think about the country. Look, we have 70,000 people working. There are 4 million citizens out there. We have to make the decision for the 4 million citizens to benefit. We can't only be thinking about ourselves. We got to be thinking about the whole country.
I want to talk about protests, because there have been a wave of protests. People have been protesting against this government since you came to power.
Yeah, the party that lost the election is not a Liberian citizen. It's a political party that lost the election. They lost the election in the first round. They protested that the election should not be held. They should cancel the election. The election wasn't canceled. We went to second round. We won the election. The same political parties that are still arguing, let it argue in 2017 that there shouldn't be election, they should have a new election. So it's not a new scenario. The parties want election to be rerun. They have to wait for 2023. Let's go back to the people of Liberia to make a decision. The president is not going to resign. The president elected by the people of Liberia. The president will wait until 2023. He will be on the ballot paper again. When the people of Liberia decide that they want a new president to make that decision, and based on that decision, the president will peacefully leave office.
Nathaniel McGee is Liberia's Minister of State for Presidential Affairs. He spoke with us here in our Washington studio. Tanzania's policy banning pregnant girls from school has come under fire from the African Commission on Human Rights. The organization said last week that it was deeply concerned about various human rights issues in Tanzania, which also includes freedom of expression in the media. Judy Gitao, Regional Coordinator at Equality Now's Africa office, spoke with Ricky Stryak about the ban and the increasing pressure on those fighting for women's and girls' rights in Tanzania.
The most unfortunate thing about the ban that the Tanzanian government has put in place with regards to pregnant schoolgirls is that the girls are not only locked out of school for the duration of their pregnancy, which in and of itself is discriminatory, but also for the rest of their lives, that once girls get pregnant, they can never come back to school. And so different organizations that have spoken out against it or are speaking out against it are finding their freedom of expression and association being highly restricted. Their freedom of expression is being restricted. There's interference with their modes of communication and even with their movement. And so that as an advocacy issue or an issue that they could speak to is increasingly becoming dangerous for them or even for their existence.
Can you give me an example of someone, maybe a journalist or an organization, who has experienced blowback when they were trying to bring attention to this issue?
We do work with a partner. I'm not sure I should give you a specific name because of their own security, but we do have a partner that works with girls who have dropped out of school on account of them being pregnant. And she was directly asked by state officials to pull down her Facebook page, her Twitter handle, and any other social media platform which she was using for purposes of agitating for these issues. We also have a partner out of Dar es Salaam who have had their communication interfered with. And in one instance, they called for a press conference to address the further violation of girls' rights. And their press conference, the different journalists who were to attend their press conference were restricted from actually attending the press conference. And they did have their communication, meaning the phone and email communication, being interfered with as well.
One of the issues seems to be that Tanzania in recent years, when it comes to freedom of expression, when it comes to human rights, it just seems to be getting worse instead of better. Is that the case?
A specific space is shrinking and has been shrinking in the past few years. Tanzania has been, in the past, has been, you know, a beacon of the region with regards to their embracing of human rights. And even with regards to women's rights, Tanzania had signed and ratified the Maputo Protocol on the Rights of Women. And so indeed, it is in recent times, in the past 4 or so years, that Tanzania has completely deteriorated with the situation becoming worse and worse. To think that issues to do with reproductive health rights, let alone basic education for girls, is becoming a question or an issue that can ruin not only condemnation, but use of force in terms of, for example, arresting pregnant girls on account of their own pregnancy. I mean, it's a complete mess.
That was Judy Gutal, Regional Coordinator at Equality Now's Africa office. You're speaking to Ricky Stryak from Nairobi, Kenya. Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with results from the weekend's matches in the Elite CAF Champions League Match Day 1 fixtures. Reigning African club champions Esperance de Tunis opened their group stage campaign with an emphatic 2-0 away win to Raja Casablanca in Morocco in Group D. GS Kabylie defeated AS Vita 1-0. In Group A, Zamalek got off to a horrific start with a 3-0 defeat at the hands of host
TP Mazembe. The second Group A match came from Estadio 11 de Novembro, where Angola's Primeiro de Agosto played to a 1-1 draw with Zambia's Zesco United. Group C's opening game was staged in Blinda, Algeria, where USM Alger were held 1-1 by Moroccan heavyweights Wydad Casablanca. Another major result on Saturday night came from Swanee in South Africa, where Mamelodi Sundowns took early control of Group C with a 3-0 win over Angola's Petro de Luanda. The CAF Champions League will continue next weekend with group stage match day 2 fixtures on the 6th to the 7th of December. Staying with football news, Kelechi Iheanacho struck deep into stoppage time on Sunday night as Leicester City beat Everton 2-1 to close the gap on Liverpool at the top of the Premier League to 8 points. Richarlison had given the visitors a shock lead at the King Power Stadium as Everton produced a performance that may do enough to save manager Marco Silva's job ahead of the Merseyside Derby on Wednesday. But the introduction of the Nigerian forward just after the hour mark changed the game, as Kelechi Iheanacho set up Jamie Vardy to equalize and then dramatically scored the winner, which was initially ruled out for offside before a VAR review overturned the decision. Kelechi Iheanacho immediately after the game said the victory was well deserved.
So I've been working hard in training every day to make sure I keep up to the standard. So I'm happy today. I get in a goal and assisting Jamie. So today was very good and it was fantastic with the whole team. So we enjoyed.
Away from football news now, the National Olympic Committee of Kenya General Assembly has approved a budget of $5.8 million for the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games. The National Olympic Committee of Kenya President Paul Tergat disclosed that from the budget, $2.4 million will go towards preparations and qualification for the Summer Games due from July the 24th to August the 9th in the Japanese capital.
Our subject is our sportsmen, should be the rallying point. With any discussion that we should be talking, about these sportsmen that we are managing.
In cycling news, South Africa's Daryl Empey is among the 15 nominees for this year's Africa Cyclist Trophy. The trophy is given to the rider who, through their results, has contributed the most and raised awareness of cycling in Africa. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Cameroon separatists have claimed responsibility for shooting at a Cameroon Airlines passenger plane on Sunday as it approached Bamenda Airport. However, Chris Anu, the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed interim government of Ambazonia, says the shooting was not intended to bring down the plane, but rather to send a message to the Cameroon government that all Cameroon government planes are banned from flying over Ambazonia airspace. Cameroon Airlines said the flight from Douala landed safely. Zimbabwe's opposition Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, says it is its leader, Nelson Chamisa, was nearly gunned down by the police on Sunday in the country's Marondera region east of Harare, while Chamisa and party supporters were planting trees near a clinic. Police spokesperson, Assistant Commissioner Paul Nyanti, dismissed the allegations as false, saying the police used tear gas to disperse the MDC activists who, he said, were holding an illegal gathering. That is it for this Monday, December 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very productive week.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the International Day for the Disabled Persons is commemorated on December 3rd. Disability on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
On December 6th, Border Crossings will bring you the greatest songs inspired by the soul genre. You'll hear smash hits from Three Dog Night, Holland Oates, and George Michael. If you like these tracks, you'll love our Soul Inspirations theme. December 6th on The Voice of America.